Well, as you know, we've been bringing lessons about different biblical characters. We're going to talk about, the title was Israel. Of course, we're going to be talking about Jacob. Isaac and Rebekah, his father, Jacob's father, they were unable to have children, as you know. And if you'll turn over to Genesis chapter 25, we'll be highlighting a number of things. There's a lot of chapters involved, but I've selected certain stories, if you would, with regards to Jacob. But it all begins with Rebekah and not able to have children. And so Isaac pleads with the Lord in Genesis chapter 25 and verse 31. It says, Isaac pleaded with the Lord and the Lord granted his plea. So inside the womb, which is what Steve read, there is a tussle that's going on. And there is a struggle that's taking place when the Lord opens her womb and she has a child. And this has Rebekah perplexed as to what's going on. Is there something wrong? And so she inquires of the Lord to find out, is there something wrong? And that's where Steve read in our scripture reading that God told Rebekah, no, you're carrying twins. And that there are two nations in your womb. And that one will be stronger than the other, and that one will serve the other. And so that is the story in the beginning of the fact that the two boys will be born. Many of us have had the opportunity to witness the birth of a child. And the first child to be born was Esau. And so Esau comes out, and because he's the oldest of the two, he would receive the birthright as the eldest child. Now, in the children's classes, as you would begin to talk about Esau and some of these things, this is where maybe back in the day you would have had the children color a picture of Esau, and then you would maybe make something that is hairy, and it'll go well with the story of the deception of Isaac. But he is a hairy individual, so that's what Esau means, is hairy. And then we know that Jacob came after him, and Jacob, and again, as I mentioned, the birthing process, it's very interesting to me that here you have the first one born, and the next child is strong enough to have a hold of the heel of his brother, Esau, and as he now makes his way through the birth canal, he's hanging on to his foot, and that to me, it makes you wonder, were they duking it out all the time in the womb, but that's how he is named. And so Jacob means to the supplanter, and I'm not sure why my fonts have gone off the screen, but supplanter, or to supplant. It actually also means this idea of a heel catcher. But the idea of supplanting means to usurp the place of, or especially through the intrigue or underhanded tactics. And so this is going to be a description of a lot of the things that Jacob will do, as maybe you're already thinking of some of the stories that we might be covering. Now, this struggle took place in the womb, and it would be a struggle that would take place between the two. As he said, there's two nations. And so there's a whole study in and of itself. I think I've talked about the Edomites, but the Edomites are the descendant of Esau, and we'll see in a moment how he becomes known as Edom. But the Edomites and the Israelites are always struggling. In fact, you know, David puts a stronghold, and there's just a constant struggle when the nations are pressing against Israel. The Edomites are the ones, Esau descendants, who can't stand them or are wanting them to get wiped out and pointing. You can just see them. There's one over there. Go get him. And this struggle just continues between these nations. And some of that, I think, comes through the stories that you know, especially the first one that we're going to look at, and that is how Jacob obtained the birthright. So let's go over here. We're here in chapter 25. We're going to look at verse 29 beginning. Now Rebekah had a brother whose name was Laban, and Laban ran out to the man by the well. Let me get in the right chapter, 25 and in verse 29. Now Jacob cooked a stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was weary. And Esau said to Jacob, "Please feed me with that same red stew, for I'm weary." Therefore his name was called Edom, which means red. But Jacob said, "Sell me your birthright as of this day." And Esau said, "Look, I'm about to die, so what is this birthright to me?" Then Jacob said, "Swear to me as of this day." So he swore to him, and he sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils that he ate and drank, arose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Well, we know this story of Esau coming from the field, and he's hungry, and Jacob has this red stew for him to eat, and Esau asks for some. And again, that's how he becomes known as Edom, which means red. And that's where the Edomites come from, as his descendants. But here's something to think about when we think about Jacob. And one of the things about the Bible, when we study these biblical characters, we talk about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the forefathers. God promised to Abraham, God promised to Isaac, God promised to Jacob. And we're going to see where God made the promises to Jacob. And yet we read of the things that these individuals do. And now, what would you do? And for those that have siblings, and I think most of us have siblings, but what would you do if your brother came in and he's famished and weary and so hungry that he's, you know, you almost wonder if there's drama, but they're, you know, it's like, I'm going to die if I don't get something to eat. And so what do? Well, these two have struggled, you know, from birth. And his name, Jacob's name, means supplanter. And so here's where, what's he going to do? Well, he's going to bargain. And he's going to take something away that is very valuable from Esau, his brother. So he takes advantage of his brother's weakness, supplanter. And he asks his brother, "Well, sell me your birthright." But here's where Esau makes this mistake, because he sees no value in his birthright, because he believes, "I'm going to die of starvation," and so he sells his birthright. Well, I can tell you that sometimes we get so hungry that we think, you know, I'll eat a horse, and there's all, you know, I'm going to feel like I'm going to die, I'm going to pass out, and all these types of things. But that's highly unlikely that we're at the point where we're starving and we're about to die. But Esau, according to the passage, it says that he despised his birthright there in verse 34. Now hold your place, go over to Hebrews chapter 12, because the Hebrew writer brings up Esau over in the New Testament. And notice what the Hebrew writer says in chapter 12 and in verse 16. He says, "Lest there be any fornicator or profane person like Esau, who for one morsel of food sold his birthright." So here he's called a profane person. A profane person. And he's so foolish because he sells his birthright for one morsel of food. And basically for one meal. For one meal. I've made some silly bargains over the years. Kara was up north visiting a young man, and she wrote back and she says, "Is it true that you traded your motorcycle for a VCR?" And I said, "Yes." Now, please understand that at the time, VCRs were hundreds of dollars when they first came out. And I was going to college, and for whatever reason, I thought, I don't need that little Kawasaki motorcycle anymore. I'd worn it out and all that stuff. And I look back now, that was a dumb trade. And then I remember my uncle, when I graduated high school, he gave me a Cougar Ann, which is a 1/10 of an ounce of gold. And I hung on to that thing, 1/10, a genuine 1/10 of an ounce of gold. And you know what I traded that stupid thing for? I cashed it in and bought a GPS, which is long gone. You have it on your phone, didn't last very long, and I'm like, what in the world? You know, the tenth of a thing was worth, you know, X amount, but it's like, now I look back and say, this was dumb swaps. Well, that was my stupidity. This was of great value, and he is a profane person because he did this. For one meal. Now, that doesn't mean, well, he should have bargained for 10 meals or something of that nature. He did not see the value in his birthright. Now, one of the things that's very interesting is that God can foresee all of this and use people and carry out his plan. And I'm going to make this point a little bit further down in the lesson two again, but God can carry out his plan even when man tries to or goes off in a direction. He gets it back to where he wants it to get it to be. And so God had said the one would serve the other. And so that's really what's happening here. But how's it happening? It's happening because Jacob is taking advantage of his brother. And so a lesson for us is not to take advantage of a person when they are weak. It's like we say, don't kick somebody when they're down. And I realize this all leads to what God has prophesied about the younger being greater, the older, but then the older. But Jacob should have been concerned about his brother. And that wasn't a fair deal at all. One meal for the birthright of the older brother, which would be the double portion and the blessing from the father. But then we know the story that takes place of, well, that doesn't stop there. So now it comes time to get the blessing. And so in Genesis chapter 27, and again, you can maybe scan this as I'm kind of talking through the story, but I realize this is a familiar story to all of us, but Jacob is loved by his mother, Rebekah, and Esau is loved by his father, Isaac. And I would just say there's a lesson for us. It's not wise at all for parents to favor one child over another, is it, Caroline or Emma? It's not fair at all, is it? No. And it's true in any family, and I've raised five children, and they all have similarities, but they all are very unique and very different from one another. And Psalms 127 and verse 3 reminds us that our children are a blessing or a heritage or a gift, some of the translations say, and every one of them, each and every one. And so there's problems when you show favoritism. Now, what's going to happen is this is going to carry through, because who's going to favor somebody? Well, Jacob, who's favored by his mother and Esau by his father, Jacob's going to favor Joseph. And that's going to cause problems in the family too. So that's not good at all that we do this. But we know the story. So Jacob will go on to favor Joseph, and his brothers will sell him. And again, is God able to take that? Yeah, he's able to get them down to Egypt where they grow to be a nation. But when we come back to the story, we see that he is trying to be blessed by his father. So again, Jacob, the supplanter, is trying to supplant his brother's blessings. And so you know the story. His mother and he, Isaac wants to have a meal from the field. So Esau goes to get that game and to hunt and get it and dress it and bring it back. And Rebekah hears that account. And so what does she do? Well, she tells Jacob that, we're going to fool your father. And Jacob jumps right in. Now, Isaac is old. Isaac's vision is what we would say today. He's legally blind. He literally can't tell who's standing in front of him. And so here you have a child taking advantage of their parent. So look at Genesis 27, verse 11. So I've got a few verses here that we'll highlight. Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "Look, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth-skinned man." Verse 15, "Then Rebekah took the choice clothes of her elder son Esau, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. She put on the skins of the kids of the goat on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck." Now, what did you do in your Bible class? Well, that's where you had the kids do something where they were hairy or something of that nature. But what's the point? You know, as a kid, that's pretty neat, but what's going on? Well, he's deceiving his father, who can't even see. And so they're dressing him up, and they're making him as if he is Esau. And verse 16 again, She put the skins of the kids on the goats of his of the goat on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. Now, look at verse 18. So he went to his father and said, "My father," and he said, "Here I am." "Who are you, my son?" Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn." Now, what is that? That's a flat-out lie. That's a flat-out lie. Is he Esau? No. "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done just as you told me. Please arise, sit, and eat your game, that your soul may bless me." Now, what else did he lie about? Had they gone out and hunted and got it? Like, no. He said, go out there and get one and come in. And his mother knew how to make it and fix it just like he liked it. And so he's being deceived. And so they're lying. Now look at verse 20. Isaac said to his son, "How is it that you have found it so quickly, my son?" He said, "Because the Lord your God brought it to me." Deception. Lies. Now look at verse 24. Now, this is where, verse 23, he did not recognize him because his hands were, let's read back in 21. Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come near that I may feel you, my son, whether you are really my son Esau or not." So Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, and he felt him and said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." And he did not recognize him because his hands were very hairy like his brother Esau's hands, so he blessed him. Then he said to him, "Are you really my son Esau?" And he said, "I am." Now that's just, again, those are just lies. And his father is trying, and sometimes you can relate to this. There are times that you are trying to discern, is this the truth or a lie? And things were not adding up for Isaac. This is not Esau's voice. You have the voice of Jacob. And so it kept, you know, he's trying to get to the, but he finally just gives up and says, well, it must be. But his son is lying to him. Now, I want to make some points because, again, it's true that God had foretold that Esau would serve Jacob. The situation and circumstances must not allow us to lie or to deceive. And so let me make just a point or two here. Many believe that the situation can allow someone to lie and commit sin. Well, what is that? Well, that's what we call situation ethics. Each situation may call for a different response. And you may even contradict the teaching of the Bible. If you're starving, it's okay to steal food. Well, that's the situation. And that's the kind of stuff that's taught in the school system. They pose you with these questions. And they try to get you to say, see, if you're starving, you're going to steal. Well, this is a false teaching, situation ethics. Can a situation like Jacob's situation warrant a lie? Of course not. Of course not. Was he just carrying out the Lord's will to get things done the way God had planned? But I'm reminded of the teaching in the Scriptures to honor your father and mother. Is he honoring his father by lying to him, deceiving him? Of course not. Well, let me just put it this way. What does running late to worship allow the breaking of traffic laws? I got a ticket. I've told you this. Lisa was pregnant with Nicholas. We were running behind. I'm flying down a side road trying to get to my parents because we would ride with them on out to Tarpon Springs. And a police officer pulled me over and said, "You're speeding in a 35 mile an hour." Said, I'm going to worship. He said, No problem. Go on your way. No, I got a ticket. The situation did not, I'm going to be late. It didn't warrant. It doesn't work that way. I was given a speeding ticket. We see in accounts like this that a man such as Jacob circumventing God's ability to carry out his plan without man helping. See, that goes back to, this is like Abraham when he said, "You promised me a son. How about my servant?" Sarah says, "This is taking too long. Just take my handmaid." You see, no, God said this. And so God would solve this without Jacob making a mess of things. But I also know God is omniscient, and he can know these things and know that that's how it's going to turn out. But this is not God saying, "Yeah, this is just the way I wanted this to happen," and lies and deception, and "we'll get my plan carried out." You know that's not true. And so God's plan is going to be fulfilled for sure, whether Jacob is doing this or not. But this is actually how it ends up falling into place, because God is able to navigate those types of things. That's what makes him God. And that's something that you can think on, you can ponder on. And I don't know if you'll ever conclude how in the world he can do that, but that makes him God and not us. Well, as we know, Rebekah and Jacob is blessed by his father Isaac, and Esau is angry. When he comes in, now with the food, and Isaac realizes that he has blessed Jacob and Esau hasn't got the blessing, Esau is just begging to have some kind of blessing. And so he actually, if you look at verse 41, "So Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, 'The days of mourning for my father at hand, then I will kill my brother Jacob.'" We already studied Cain and Abel and the horrible killing of one brother killing another. He is so angry. And this sets the tone for the Edomites against the Israelites. And of course, there's more of the story of when Jacob reunites with Esau. We're not going to look at that. But our habit should be that of telling the truth. To tell the truth, even when it's uncomfortable in doing so. Be truthful. Then there is the ladder to heaven in chapter 28. And this is a unique story as well. It's found in verses 10 through 22. "Now Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran. And he came to a certain place and stayed there all night because the sun had set. And he took one of the stones of the place and put it at his head, and he lay down at the place to sleep. Then he dreamed, and behold, a ladder was set up on the earth, and its top reached into heaven. And there the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. Behold, the Lord stood above it and said, 'I am the Lord God of Abraham, your father, and of the God of Isaac, the land of which you lie. I will give to you and your descendants. Also your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west and to the east, to the north and the south. And in you and in your seed all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you.' Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, 'Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it.' And he was afraid and said, 'How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven.' Then Jacob arose in the morning and took the stone that he had put at his head, set it up as a pillar, and poured oil on it, on the top of it. And he called the name of the place Bethel, but the name of the city had been Luz previously. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, 'If God be with me and keep me this way that I'm going, and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on, so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God, and this stone which I've set as a pillar shall be God's house, and all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you.'" So as you think about this particular dream that he's had, basically this is where the promise is given to him that just like Abraham and his father Isaac, he is going to receive the blessing. His descendants would be numerous, and they would inherit that land. A couple of things here. Jacob vows to give a tenth of all his possessions to God. Well, isn't that what God would require of the Israelites under the law of Moses, that they would give a tenth of all the things that they had? It's also interesting, Jacob vows that he will serve the Lord if all comes true, which we know it does. Notice chapter 31 and in verse 13. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land and return to the land of your family. So this all comes true. And of course, this is the story of Jacob going off, and Leah and Rachel and the 12 sons are born. Chapter 35 and verse 1. Then the God said to Jacob, arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there and make an altar there to God who appeared to you when you fled from the face of Esau, your brother. Going back to that time that we just read, verse 3, then let us arise and go to Bethel, and I will make an altar there to God who answered me in the day of my distress and has been with me in the way which I have gone. Verse 15. It's all of this from, as you see on the screen, 9 through 15. What I wanted to emphasize here is this particular point. Bethel means house of God. And this is the old ancient city of Bethel. And this is also where Jeroboam would set up one of the two golden calves to keep the northern people from going back down to Jerusalem. So it's down in the south. And the significance of the city of Bethel is found in the fact that it is mentioned, and I did not know this, it is mentioned more than any other city in the scriptures except for Jerusalem. It is a prominent city, and this goes back to where he built this pillar. God starts saying, I am the God that you met in Bethel. I want you to go back, which is what he had said, if I can come back to this place. And so Bethel is a very significant town in the scriptures. Now, the ladder to heaven is a very memorable story. It serves us well to remember the promises of God, which he made to Jacob. When you think of, well, what happened when he saw this vision of the ladder? And it is also the day that Jacob vowed to God, and that he would make God his God. Then there's this last one that I want us to look at, and it's found in chapter 32. And let's begin reading in verse 22. And Jacob arose that night and took his two wives, his two female servants. This is before he's to meet Esau. And his 11 sons, and crossed over the ford of Jabbok. He took them and set them over the brook, and he sent over what he had. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. Now when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, let me go, for the day breaks. But he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. He said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. He said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed. Then God asked, saying, tell me your name, I pray. Then Jacob asked, saying, tell me your name, I pray. And he said, why is it that you ask my name? And he blessed him there. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel. And I have seen, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. Just as he crossed over Peniel, the sun rose on him, and he limped on his hip. Therefore, to this day, the children of Israel do not eat the muscle, that shank, which is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip and the muscle, that shank. Now, just before Jacob meets his brother, Esau wrestles all night with a man. And as the day is breaking, the man saw he was not prevailing, so he touched his hip and moved it out of socket. And so now he's in great pain, and he has no strength as in your legs. You know, there's a lot of strength in your legs. And so Jacob would not let go until he received a blessing from the man. And this is where his name is changed to Israel. His name is changed to Israel. So that's where we start getting the Israelites. Now, he struggled with God and prevailed. Jacob sees this encounter as, I've seen God face to face, and somehow I lived. And so he wrestles with this man, and he's not able to defeat, or the man is able to defeat him, although they've wrestled all night, with one touch. But he won't even give up then. And he hangs on until he says, you bless me. Now, what was the promise? That the younger would, as he received the blessing, and the Edomites would all serve the Israelites. But we also see that the blessing that he receives is from the greater, who also is able to change his name. Now, I want you to go over to, we won't be coming back to Genesis, so you don't have to hold your place. Go over to Hosea, however, the minor prophet Hosea, and look at chapter 12, because this, what we just read, comes up again. Hosea chapter 12, verse 2. The Lord also brings a charge against Judah and will punish Jacob according to his ways. According to his deeds, he will recompense him. He took his brother by the heel in the womb, and in his strength he struggled with God. Yes, he struggled with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought favor from him. He found him in Bethel, and there he spoke to us. That is the Lord God of hosts. The Lord is his memorable name. So you, by the help of your God, return, observe mercy and justice, and wait on your God continually. Now, what I wanted to point out here is, have some of you noticed that back in Genesis, the word man is capitalized? Now, again, things are not, this is all man capitalizing things. Do you notice that angel is capitalized here? Now, here's the point I want to make. This may yet again be an encounter with Christ the Rock, the Word, that was present in the Old Testament. There are these, you remember in the fiery furnace, I see four. Do you remember Joshua? They're about to go in to the promised land, and there's this warrior who says, I lead the host. And what did he do? He worshiped him. Angels don't receive worship. Now, we don't have that here, but now you might be struggling with this. Why couldn't he defeat, if this is God, why couldn't he defeat him? Why was it such a struggle? That's why I made the point. When it was time to be done, what did he do? With one touch, you can just see him touching his hip and everything going awry. Now again, I don't know. That's something for you to ponder on. But we see these types of events where, what did he perceive? I have seen God. I've been in the presence of God. Now, we know that no man has seen the face of God and lived. So we also have to take that in consideration as well. But there are things that that revolve around these stories that maybe we've known for a very, very long time, that maybe it's always good to reread them, and you might find it enjoyable to go back. And as I said, this is a course of several chapters, so it's kind of hard to, you know, let's just roll through all of them without it being multiple lessons. But of course, we skipped all of the Leah and Rachel and the birth of the children, and then he can't get away from Laban and so on and so forth. But you remember, he was told, you go back to our family and find a wife. So he's going, and that's where this other takes place. Now, God does bless him, and his promises are sure and do come true. They always do, and we see that in the accounts of and stories like this. We've seen it's not good to lie. Never is it good to lie. We need to tell the truth, even when it's not comfortable. God can carry out his plans. He doesn't need us to try to help him along. We need to always do what is right and say what is right. You might be here tonight and you're not a Christian. We want to extend an invitation, as we always do. If you need to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, things are ready for you to be able to be immersed in water, to have your sins washed away. Maybe you're a child of God and something's amiss that you need to make correction of. We want to pray with you and for you. Maybe there's a need for encouragement. If we can help anyone in any way, let's stand and sing our invitation song.